There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free. And things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it. No matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, co-host and producer Tim Dennis. This evening, we've got two gentlemen joining us. We'll be with them in a minute here. They're going to talk to us about their adventures with the paranormal and their investigations and the crazy things that happened to them at the Skinwalker Ranch. Before that, I do want to mention, as we alluded to in the past here, we are working on a ghost hunting trip. Now, we've got two different people that have committed to this. So, first one that we're trying to work together is going out and doing an investigation with two of the members of TAPS from the sci-fi TV show Ghost Hunters. We have not locked down which two. We do have a couple that are definitely interested and want to do it. It is going to be exciting. Hopefully, we can release out the information in the next week or two here during one of the live shows to let you know who's going to be going. But we're going to be looking to go probably in June or July. And that'll be out in Rhode Island. We're going to go out in an actual investigation and have dinner with a couple of the TAPS members. If you have an interest, I need you to email me on that. We've had good response so far. I've got about 20, 25 people that would like to go. But I'd like some more information so I can let the guys know from Ghost Hunters how many people are interested in going. You can email me at dave@darknessradio.com. The other investigation that we're going to do, we're working to get together with Chris Fleming, the host from the Biography Channel's Dead Famous. If you've seen that, it's a great show. Chris is actually going to go out with us and do a couple of investigations as well in the Chicagoland area. So if you have an interest in the paranormal, you'd like to talk more about the paranormal, you can come on out to that one. If it's in Chicago and interested, please email me at dave@darknessradio.com. Just let me know if you're interested in the Rhode Island, the Chicago, or both. And the third and final trip we're working on to go on with our listeners is the UFO Expo, where we're going to actually go out to Washington. We're going to go to James Gill property and spend a night or two out there checking out the skies to see if we can actually see UFOs for ourselves. If you have an interest in that, please email me and let me know that you are interested in the UFO. Now, I've gotten a lot of interest in the two ghost hunting trips, not so much in the UFO. I'd like to know if people do have an interest in going out to check out for actual UFO activity. If you do, please let us know on that right away so we know if we're going to move ahead and do a program with that. Again, you can email me there at dave@darknessradio.com. This evening, we've got two guests with us on the line. We've got Rich Oliver and Matt Groen, and they're good enough to be with us this evening. They're going to share their experiences in the paranormal, talk to us a little bit about their experiences in the past and what has occurred with their actual interaction with the Skinwalker Ranch. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, dude.
Appreciate having you here. Now, I apologize, our computers are out right now, so I don't have your flourished little bios to tell people. Why don't we start off? Rich, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Tell us, you know, what you've done in the past, what kind of interest you have in the paranormal, and then we'll go over to you as well, Matt.
You bet, Dave. My interest started really quite early. Well, first of all, I have a degree in psychology. I've worked with the mentally ill in many settings for probably a decade. I was a crisis worker for the state of Utah for a while, worked on a crisis line, was a mental health officer for a local mental health authority. My interest in the paranormal, I think, started when I was younger. I grew up in a town in the Cache National Forest, and I actually encountered what I considered to be a Bigfoot. That's a story I was actually... people that I know quite well know that story. They heard that and were aware of that from the time it happened. That was my first encounter with what I would consider the paranormal. Since then, I've done a lot of reading. I've affiliated myself with local groups, and I've attended a lot of activities with them. I have a lot of experience also with paranormal in the form of ghosts and mediumship and divination and some of these things as well. So my interests are quite diverse in that area.
Well, good grief, we're getting some strange feedback here.
I'm sorry, Dave, what was that?
I said we're getting some strange feedback. I don't know if people are hearing it over the lines, but it's echoing out pretty loudly out here. Go ahead, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. It was just feeding back on us, sir.
Oh, okay. Is it bad enough you can't hear it?
No, I can hear you now. It was just all of a sudden we just started getting feedback. I don't know what kind of crazy alien activity you guys are bringing with you, but that's all right. It's a good start for the show, I guess.
You never know.
So you said you saw Bigfoot. You had an experience with Bigfoot. Did you just see him, or was there an interaction with him?
It was just a sighting. Okay. I actually walked within probably 20 yards, and it appeared behind some rocks and just stood. We stood and stared at each other for the better part of a minute. And then, obviously, I retreated fairly quickly.
Sure. How tall would you estimate that it was?
I would say it was between 8 and 10 feet.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
And did it have that? I know a lot of people say that they've got that really strong, musky, skunk smell to it.
I didn't smell it.
Okay.
And it was a lot thinner than I had been led to believe they were.
Okay.
But it...
Maybe it's that new Pilates tape you got.
It was.
Okay.
Something, obviously. Or it wasn't eating very well.
Okay. So you got to start off, that was kind of your first introduction into the paranormal by doing that. I would assume that that's got to be kind of a life-changing event to actually see something like that for yourself, and
well,
now you're going to be questioning everything in your life.
It is. Every time you do encounter something that doesn't fit in that box that you kind of have to place your beliefs in, it obviously does stretch you. And consistently with the kind of activities we run into or the kind of activities and the events that we witness, you know, it almost pays not to have a box, to be honest with you, David.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, you got to keep yourself open if you're interested in the paranormal at this point.
It is. It is. You can't really limit it because the experiences, you don't really have a place to put some of them. There's no, you know, nail to hang it on.
Right. Okay. And then, now, Matt, what about your experiences with the paranormal?
Let's see. I, you know, growing up here in Utah, you know, it's really changed the state slogan from a pretty great state to a pretty weird state. I grew up in a house that had a lot of paranormal activity in it, and it was just kind of, you know, I was just raised with it being kind of a matter of fact thing. But I got involved with Utah UFO hunters about maybe a year and a half ago, and we've gone out on a couple expeditions. We've looked for Bigfoot. We found tracks, that type of thing, and there's been other people have had sightings. And right now we've got the Dugway Proving Grounds and Michael's Air Force Base, and they have a lot of activity. A lot of people believe that it's becoming a new Area 51. If you go out there, you can actually see them testing new equipment. Some of it doesn't really look very terrestrial based.
All right.
Fun stuff.
Now, you know, what's interesting with that, you bring up Area 51 and a new Area 51. There was just a special not too long ago, I think it was either on the History or Discovery Channel, about the truth behind UFOs. And they were actually showing footage from around World War II time that Hitler, they were actually trying to create UFOs as a destructive unit that they could be able to take into battle. And then I guess America jumped into the fray as well with some Canadian counterparts to help them try to build this stuff. And they said that they've actually seen, a lot of these bigwigs have actually seen incredible prototypes of alien technology, or what would appear to be alien technology. And they said that the reason that they ended up coming out about the stealth bomber was because they were, the pilots were having so much trouble doing the simulation flights at night because it's so black and so dark and it didn't light up at all, that they were getting disoriented, so they were going to have to do more daytime test trials with this, and they wanted to let people know what it was so they knew it wasn't UFO activity. Do you think that there's more of that going on than really alien?
I think there's some correlation with that. I know that the black triangles that everybody's seeing these days have a real strong correlation to U.S. Air Force bases. If you do a lot of searches on the internet, it's pretty easy to find a picture of them these days. They have usually three distinct lights and then a middle light, and they're usually black, and they usually move. They can move very fast, but they also can hover or kind of glide very slowly across the air. And there's a real strong correlation between those, like I said, in U.S. Air Force bases.
Sure. Now, if you guys can tell me, now, we brought you on the show because we wanted to talk about, unfortunately, Colm Kelleher, the author of Hunt for Skinwalker, was supposed to join us a few weeks ago, and he was taken ill and not able to join us. But you guys have had some experiences. Maybe you can fill in the listeners here in a second about Skinwalker Ranch, what it is. I mean, personally, it sounds to me like a porno place if you have no familiar with what it is. If you can let us know, and the only thing if I can ask, guys, if you can speak up a little bit because you're both very quiet. And we've got the units potted up as loud as we can. I just want to make sure everybody can hear your stories. So why don't you give us a little bit of the history and background on the Skinwalker Ranch?
Do I need that, Rich, or should I?
Let's have you go with that, Matt.
Okay. About 1997, I believe, there was a family that moved in. They were by the name of the Shermans, and they bought this ranch. They wanted to raise, I believe, Angus cattle there. And they got it for a song. The ranch hadn't been inhabited for quite a while, and the family that owned it prior to them were willing to sell it to them, but they had a lot of weird provisions in the contract, like they had to get permission from the previous family and a notification before they did any digging in the area. And over the next several months, they saw a lot of strange lights. They had a lot of what would be maybe classified as ghost or poltergeist activity in the house, cattle mutilations, strange sights. They saw they had this big metal box that would occasionally chase the owner of the ranch. They had some of their dogs actually chase. He had to coax the dogs to chase after this light he saw. When they heard a scream from the dogs, and when he went into the woods, there was nothing but a kind of a gooey paste where the dogs were. Just a bunch of odd things, and finally, he feared for his family's safety, and he sold the ranch to a group called NIDS, which is owned by a fellow by the name of Bigelow. He basically has taken over a lot of the UFO research for the U.S. government, and a lot of the UFO hunters, Utah UFO hunters, were some of the first people on the scene. And so Rich, myself, and a couple other people plan to go up there and take a look and see how things have changed. Supposedly there's been a slowdown in activity. And that's kind of where our story starts, I guess.
Okay. Now, what about the term skinwalker? For those people that are not familiar, what does skinwalker mean?
Okay. Skinwalker is a Navajo term.
Okay.
Local Indian tribe. And they... The Skinwalker Ridge is actually on the Ute Reservation, which is just bordering it. And supposedly the Utes at one time offended the Navajo. They basically came in and drove them off of this area. And supposedly they cursed them with Navajo witches would come and terrorize them. They're in some stories, cannibalistic, I guess, witches who use kind of the power of dead people. Necromancy and shape-shifting to terrorize people.
So skinwalkers are basically people that can shape-shift and change from human to animal form?
Yeah, and then they also have they actually have ground up bits of dead people that they kind of make this powder out of, and they can blow it at you, and it supposedly will kill you within a day or two.
I think that's called spam.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's a little bit of a history on it. Why don't we, we're going to come back in a few minutes. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Our guests this evening are Rich Oliver and Matt Groen, and they're on the line to talk to us a little bit about their experiences at the Skinwalker Ranch. We'll be back with their stories, which are amazing, right after this.
Adopting aliens and giving them good homes since 1953. Just don't tell our landlord.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
It's Dave and Tim, shacking up in the darkness on the edge of town.
Women today are busier than ever, making it harder and harder to take care of ourselves. I'm Robin Leverton, owner of Chow Bella Permanent Cosmetics in Brooklyn Park. We specialize in beautiful, natural-looking eyeliner, eyebrows, and lip color. We provide professional and personalized service in a sanitary environment. When you choose Chow Bella, you are guaranteed the gentlest method available. I'll work with you one-on-one to help you achieve your desired look. We offer a full, rich color palette that will accentuate your natural beauty. If you have allergies to conventional makeup, suffer from hay fever, fever, watery eyes, or the embarrassment of little or faint brow color, and you want a look that will stay fresh all day, every day, then we have the perfect solution for you. Time is a rare commodity, and with Ciao Bella Permanent Cosmetics, we help you take control of your time by giving you a low-maintenance, fresh appearance that you will love every day. Book your appointment by January 31st, and you will receive a 25% discount. You deserve to look your best, and at Ciao Bella, we want to help you. Call 612-306-4961. That's 612-306-4961.
If you read Tap's Paramag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd.
I could not go to work because Bigfoot stole my car.
And the creepy. Tap's Paramag takes you where few would ever go on purpose. From exclusive interviews with the cast of The Ghost Hunters to the latest trends in technology, the field of the paranormal. To join our journey, order at tapsparamag.com.
Good evening and welcome back to the show. Thank you very much for tuning in to The Darkness on the Edge of Town. If you are just tuning in for the first time, we welcome you and thank you for checking us out. You can check us out at darknessradio.com. When you go there, make sure to click on the Discuss tab so that you can join our growing paranormal forum to talk about everything from ghosts to UFOs, Bigfoot, and beyond. This evening, our guests right now with us are Matt Groen and Rich Oliver. They just gave us a little bit of a narrative and a background about the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah, and now they're going to tell us a little bit about their experiences and what got you guys out to this. I mean, and you weren't actually on the ranch itself, right? You were on a neighboring ranch?
We were on a bordering area, but, you know, we're right on the border of it. The actual ranch itself is now owned by an organization called NIDS, the National Institute of Discovery Science, and they're not too happy about UFO people being in the area, so we camp right adjacent to it. But the area itself is in what they call Duchesne County, and it has the highest number of UFO sightings in the state of Utah, and there's just a bunch of weird stuff that happens there. The reservoir about a mile away from it is, you know, known for having glowing orbs come in and out of it, and there's giant pictures of, you know, people's got pictures of giant snakes in it, and there's
pictures of giant snakes in the orbs or in
giant snakes in the reservoir, and it's supposed to have some kind of mystical healing properties as well. So the whole area is like, people in adjacent ranches have come and talked to us about the things that they've seen, and some of them have actually gotten so wrapped up with it that they've actually gone and committed suicide afterwards. They've had such a sense of hopelessness.
Wow.
It's an interesting place.
Well, with all this activity going on, and it's actually being documented so closely and well, why haven't they purchased up the surrounding property?
They're claiming that the activity has died down in the last year or two.
And actually, Dave, a lot of that surrounding property is part of a reservation, an Indian reservation as well. So it's not, a lot of it's not available for purchase.
Okay. All right. So now this leads us to your investigation. Go ahead and let's hear what happened to you guys.
We actually went up there as skeptics. Matt, Laura, and I were supposed to be with a much larger group, and we were the leader of the local UFO hunters was going to show us that location. We were going to set up camp. It ended up that the three of us just went up there and kind of found our way to the spot that we did. We actually went up kind of lighthearted, thinking that it was, you know, going to be nothing really. We were kind of hoping to see something because none of us really have. We were tired of hearing stories. We wanted some hard evidence, wanted to see it ourselves. We went up and we joked the whole way up. We didn't take it really seriously. It was supposed to be, quote-unquote, the scariest spot on Earth, and we were coming up on Halloween, and there's a full moon, and we thought, what greater way to spend it?
No doubt. Now, how many nights did you actually spend there?
Yeah.
How many nights did you spend there?
We spent one night.
Okay, just the one night?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's hear what happened once you guys got there.
We got there about 11, and we pitched camp. We were, as we can see it now, we were just west of the ranch, near an abandoned another abandoned ranch, which has some significance in the book itself that came out, because we hadn't read the book hadn't been published yet,
mm-hmm.
or hadn't been released yet, And when we had actually read about the spot where we were at, it actually had some significance to the ranch experiences. It was kind of a little alarming. We got in there, pitched camp, set up, made dinner, and then we basically started a skywatch. And anybody familiar with the UFO protocol knows that you just kind of watch the sky.
Mm-hmm.
We noticed some very strange things. First of all, as we got there, Matt, Laura, and I are fairly articulate individuals. We got what we considered dumbing down. We were dumbed down. We couldn't speak very well. We got giddy.
Mood was really labile.
It was. We were just having a really difficult time emotionally wrapping our heads around what we were going through. We would be giddy one moment, terrified the next, and it seemed to coincide with all three of us at the same time. We also began to see some things. We would see things on the periphery. It was never really dark, which is really strange because this is far away from any cities. We noticed that just west of our camp, there was an orange glow all evening. There's nothing over there. We couldn't figure out what the orange glow was. At first, I thought, we must be close to Fort Duchesne. That must be the glow from the city or the highway. It turns out it's not. But it was light enough that we could see anything that flew or anything that moved across the horizon against the sky would show as a dark streak or a dark spot. And we saw a lot of movement that way. During the evening, we also saw what we would consider earth lights, the little lights that move really erratically. We saw probably two or three incidents of that. One of those we actually caught on the digital video. On accident, actually.
Okay.
I don't know how Matt caught that, but he caught it. We saw, Matt and Laura saw an extremely large bird fly through the camp at night. Matt and I were at one point looking at the sky and kind
now,
of...
Now, extremely large. Let me go back on that. What's extremely large? I mean,
it
wingspan?
It probably had about an 8 to 10 foot wingspan.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah, it wasn't your typical night bird for Utah, let's put it that way.
Hmm. I have no idea. Have you been able to place what you think the bird was since? Or
we were out there, like I said, in October 30th. So it would, most of the bigger stuff would have left for the area, except for maybe a hawk or a something. But no, it was much bigger than anything native to Utah per se. But the area is known for having very odd flora and fauna. Tropical birds showing up. They've had a dire wolf that was bulletproof. Is one of the more infamous stories from the area. So
right,
just
right, and that's I think one of the first chapters of the book as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're there and you're seeing all these anomalies. You're feeling almost kind of. It almost sounds like you guys had like a stoned or a drunk feeling to you the
way
you were.
That's exactly what it felt
okay.
like. Yeah, that's what it felt like. At one point, we remarked, even in the middle of this kind of strangeness, that we were totally disappointed that it was so mundane.
Okay.
I mean, Matt and I really wanted a spacecraft to come down. We wanted a door to open. We wanted to see a little green man. That was the proof for us.
Okay.
So when these things were going on,
you guys are hard to satisfy.
Yeah, we're extremely hard to satisfy, Matt. We wanted that type of a thing.
Sure.
And at one point when we were looking through, we were looking at the sky, and it was fairly overcast. We saw a flash on the upside of the clouds, and then an orb came through the clouds, and it flashed several different colors for a good 10 seconds, and it dropped towards the ranch, and it disappeared. And Matt and I turned and looked at each other and kind of said, did you see that? And yeah, we did.
Now, you guys were seeing this stuff and still thought it was mundane and kind of boring?
Well, and that's the strange thing about it. We thought it was very mundane, and to the point where we were disappointed and decided we were just going to go to bed.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a really strange feeling. We were off. We felt very, for lack of another word, maybe stoned.
Okay.
Or drunk, or somehow altered.
And it was also very odd, too. It was a very non-overcast day, but the stars would wink out every so often, and the sky would go slate gray, and then the stars would appear again, and it kind of almost coincide with the mood shifts.
Right.
Okay.
Was very odd.
All right. So then you decide to go to sleep. What happens at that point?
That's where it gets really odd.
It does get really odd at that point. We had intended to stay up. It was about 4 in the morning. Prior to us sleeping, we had actually the coyotes were circling and they were hunting. And when coyotes circle and hunt, they're really quiet until they catch their prey, and then they kind of go crazy with this little chorus. And they were circling us in a clockwise direction and hunting. In conjunction with that, we would occasionally hear a human cough, which was really odd. We heard that two times prior to us deciding to go to bed, and once just after we were in the tent. And it also was circling in that general direction. It sounded like someone was smoking and trying to suppress a cough. Despite all of this stuff, we decided about 4 o'clock that the pertinent thing to do would be to go to bed.
Okay.
Which is really strange in and of itself, because it's a pretty creepy place. Occasionally we'd have a truck would drive by, and it would spotlight us, or drive by again and spotlight us, or a different vehicle would drive by during the night, and I'm pretty sure that they were curious as to what we were doing out there, actually.
Sure.
But with all this going on, we were still convinced that it was time to go to bed. So at this point, we did. We all retired, and we actually got into the tent. Well, prior to that, Matt had put out the fire and stirred the coals.
And I buried it with about an inch of dirt.
It was buried. It was out.
Okay.
Do you want to do this part, Matt?
Okay. So, like I said, we hadn't really talked about going to bed, but all of a sudden we all kind of got tired and just said, all right, time to go to bed. And, the fire's been buried now. It's completely out. And all of a sudden it starts up again. And we're like, wow, one of us better get out there and put it out. And all of a sudden we hear something big kind of lumbering through our camp. And we're all kind of commenting on it. There's something out there, something big. And the fire just started up again. And as soon as we said the fire just started up again, it went out. And we heard a couple more kind of tenuous footsteps. And these didn't sound like full-size human footsteps, but they, I don't know, it just sounded, really odd footsteps. We commented on it, and all of a sudden, hey, it put out the fire. And then the fire started up again, and then we heard a couple more footsteps. And we're like, what the hell's that? That's kind of odd, and
but at this point, you don't want to look out the tent, or you're freaking out, Blair Witch style, or are you just...
It struck us as totally mundane.
Right.
We were kind of narrating it. Oh, it's taking a couple more steps. It just put out the fire. Then all of a sudden, the fire would start again. Oh, it started the fire up again. And then the fire would go out, and we'd hear more steps. We don't know why we didn't get out and look at it.
Well, and there was no sense of fear or even curiosity, which was very strange. At that point, it was like, oh, the fire's out. Good night.
Okay.
Was very odd. The next memory that I have is waking up in the morning, obviously, to go out and relieve myself, and Matt sat up and screamed. And Matt said, I am so sorry. I am so sorry. I couldn't stop him, basically, is what Matt was saying. And I thought that was very odd. And I went back out and went on the other side of the truck that was closer to the ranch and proceeded with my business. And I remember looking off. Last thing I remember for that period of the night is looking off into the dark and saying in my, to myself, there's someone right there. The next memory I have is being inside the tent, having my blankets off, my overalls unzipped, and everything in kind of a different order. I was kind of disheveled, and here I was inside the tent an hour and a half later.
Is that when...
So now you've got lost time on top of it.
Yeah, and then we had something crawl around the tent, actually scratching at it all along it. Kind of slowly and methodically.
Right.
And well, wouldn't did you think maybe just coyote activity if they were already helping out?
That's what I was kind of thinking.
Right.
But, when it got to my wife's, it actually pulled the tent peg up right over her head, and then it started pushing in the tent flap. Oh, not the tent flap, the actual corner of the tent, kind of trying to touch at her head. So, just another odd part of the night.
Yeah, it was.
All right, so now you've got loss of time. You're Matt. See, it's just so inconceivable to me that, if I wake up, my buddy starts screaming, I'm sorry, I couldn't stop him, I'd instead of, I'm going to go cut a leak. I'll be right back.
Well, exactly.
Just can't stop and do what? What did they do?
Well, exactly. There was no question. And this is the strangest thing is that there was a very much a dumbing down. It felt like we were I don't know, like you say, like we were stoned.
Okay.
And things did not make sense at the time. And in retrospect, but looking at these things, it's like, wow,
yeah.
That was really weird.
Yeah, to say the least.
At the time, it just didn't seem like any big deal. In fact, I even remember thinking, oh, Matt's having a nightmare. I got to go pee, you know?
Okay.
So, there it is. And there were twice more after that in the night, I actually got up and went out as well. We woke up in the morning. All three of us had very, very sore throats and severe headaches. We were, gosh, what's the word, Matt?
Very un-at ease. I don't know.
Yeah.
We just wanted to get out of there.
We did.
So we, we packed up the tents as quick as we could, and underneath the tents there was this big black ring that basically covered most of where the tent was.
Right.
And
the vegetation itself was black under the tents, which really kind of surprised us. And it wasn't the whole tent. It was the sections where we were actually lying with our sleeping bags.
Okay.
So on the way home, we were once again kind of just in this kind of dumbed down state. Had a nosebleed that, you know, took about a half an hour to calm down, and lasted about, like I said, a half an hour, which is kind of uncommon for me. And we just had this kind of sense of unease, and we just kind of all said something didn't happen. Something happened, and something's just not right. We're not, you know, we just decided that, you know, it was just an odd evening.
Mm-hmm. It was, and we had to stop actually two or three times before we got to the place where we had breakfast to go to the bathroom, which was
well.
Really
that's what
strange.
I was going to ask. What time did you guys end up waking up? I mean, what was the official get up and let's pack up and get out of here?
I would say close to 8 is when we started to pack up and get out.
So you went to bed at about 4 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
You got up to pee a couple times during this deal.
Two or three.
And is that normal for you?
Absolutely not.
Okay, and then all the way up, you know, back home, you had to stop a couple times for bathroom breaks.
Yes.
Now, were you noticing anything like blood or?
I didn't notice anything like that.
Okay.
No.
All right. So it's over and done with. You go back to your lives, thinking everything's okay, or do you think, hey, what the hell? We better go to a hypnotherapist and check this out, or what'd you do?
I think that all three of our emotional states were a little off kilter,
mm-hmm.
I think is a safe way to put it. We're all like a lot more moody, a lot more prone to anger, depression. Just things we weren't our normal selves.
Okay.
Right, right. Matt and I were actually joking about having been made autistic while we were up there because everything was so so enhanced. Smells, tastes, everything was so irritating.
Right.
And I had a lot of anger, a lot of anger. Which surprised me. It took probably, I would say realistically, 2, maybe 3 months to get a handle again on my emotions after that experience.
Now, did it take that long before you sought help to find out what actually occurred to you?
It actually kind of did.
Okay. So you meandered now through a couple months.
I think it was towards the end of November that a friend of ours, he's a hypnotherapist.
And this was November of what year?
The same year, last year, so
2005.
Okay.
All right.
She said, hey, let's have you guys in and let's see what's going on. And we all agreed. We actually arranged, we had another friend who's a hypnotherapist, so we had two of them going at the same time, just trying to be kind of quasi-scientific so that, you know, we could at least have the two initial people not have any crossover.
Sure.
And we had actually met, the three of us had met and had decided that we weren't going to discuss what we thought might have happened because we wanted to see if there was some way that we could have our stories be similar if we used hypnosis.
Okay. That's a good idea, sure.
And it was more a matter of Laura wanted to do that and Matt did. I'm less scientific than they are, but they're very rigorous as far as that goes.
Okay, so now you've gone to see this hypnotherapist in November. You haven't discussed amongst each other what occurred because you want to keep the profile of this peer so that way if you have related events, you can share those and understand where you're at.
There's also the side effect also that whenever we'd kind of talk a little bit about it, we'd all get screaming headaches.
Hmm.
So it was pretty much right, and the sinus is right above, you know, the brow line. That it would just hurt.
Have you gone in for an MRI since then to see if there's an?
No, we really should, but you know, we
metal
we
detector.
We would be like, "Ow, I got a headache," and the other two would be like, "Wow, me too. That's kind of odd," you know. And,
okay.
So we were kind of on a behavioral conditioning plan not to talk about it. I guess I don't know.
Huh? At least not together as a group. Okay. All right, boy, that's strange. All right, so then you go in and you see it. Now, are you going in one at a time, and are you recording the sessions?
Yes, the sessions are all recorded.
Okay.
And we were going in one at a time.
We had two go simultaneously, the first two. Like I said, we had two hypnotherapists.
Two separate hypnotherapists.
Right, but not two of you.
No.
Okay,
no.
So it was still one of you at a time that
yeah,
was going
so,
in.
We had Laura and Rich go initially at the same time, simultaneously, at the same location. And then I came in about an hour later.
Okay. All right. And then, well, what did you find? We've got, I don't want to rush you guys, but we've got about 17 minutes of the show left here. Let's get to the meat of this. What happened to you? This sounds completely, I don't know, I'm unnerved just hearing what's happened so far and with all the different things that have occurred.
Well, absolutely. And this is something that's very strange with us, because this is actually based on what our stories were there separately and the drawings we made immediately after. And so this is crazy. I'm gonna tell you right now, this is not normal stuff.
Sure.
And if I heard somebody talking about it, I would not believe them. I'm gonna preface it with that.
Okay, fair enough.
Matt, do you want to start within the tent? What we got happened with the fire and that section?
Kind of previously, while we were sitting around the fire before we went to bed, I actually had a big, this is in the conscious mind, I had a big black disc land on my leg and take a bite out of me. So we've actually got pictures of the wounds and everything too there. And we thought that was kind of mundane too. While we were, while under hypnosis, you know, we kind of confirmed that. And then I saw something come under the tent and come at us, you know, and grab our heads. I don't know. Why don't you go, Rich? You're a little bit more eloquent when it comes to talking about this stuff.
Well, yeah, and the shapes that and the forms that we're describing all were very similar. They were dark. They were, for lack of a better word, tentacled. I know that doesn't fit any of the alien profiles out there right now, except for something that may have happened in the bad B-movie.
Right.
But what I had actually seen in hypnosis as the thing that had come to the camp and put out the fire looked from the top like a large bug with indefinite boundaries. So it was a large black thing that moved like an insect. What Matt had actually seen in the tent and had felt had happened is something had gotten in there through the bottom of the tent flap, which I didn't do up, and had actually attempted to... It had grabbed us by the heads, essentially, and attempted to insert something. And he could talk about that a little bit more. Do you mind taking it from there, Matt? Or?
Sure. You well, that's pretty much it. That you know, there was some kind of I saw like a blue orb, which are pretty common in the area, and the tent was actually illuminated backwards from it, and all of a sudden I felt scared. And then kind of a sense of almost calmness coming over us. And then all of a sudden this thing kind of crawls up in our faces. I was the first one away from it. And I tried to struggle away, but I was too afraid. And that's.
Now, this is what your memory was.
This, yeah.
Not Rich. Rich, you had no memory
no,
of this.
No, I have no memory of this at all.
Okay.
This is Matt.
All right.
So, and that's one of those big different points. But Rich has a very similar memory later on, and maybe you can speak if
it is. It is, and the only memory that I was able to come up with for that period is when I was out on the other side of the vehicle, taking care of business, and I looked off into the dark, and in the hypnosis session, just after I said, "There's someone out there," the dark itself came into kind of a form that looked like a very tall man. And it moved really smoothly forward and grabbed me right by the head and lifted me up in the air. And the strange thing about it is that seems very dreamlike, but the experience, and I remember thinking this in my head, is, oh, I'm very close to the truck because my feet are dangling and hitting against the front of the truck. And in the hypnosis, what I remember is looking into these eyes that were fairly vacant, almost like I was looking into stars. These holes that looked like I was looking into stars. And I didn't get the idea that whatever it was that was holding me up and looking into me was malevolent. I got that it was machine-like, that it was doing some kind of a job. I was vaguely aware that just off to the left of whatever this thing was, there were two people. They were fairly short. They were around five and a half feet, and they were talking. They were like technicians. And they also had in their possession something that looked like a blue light. The blue light had kind of wavy arms coming out of it, like maybe a starfish or something.
All right, now let me ask you this. This just sounds, like you said, this sounds bizarre. It's hard to
swallow.
No, it's really
bizarre, yeah.
But one thing that keeps coming to my mind as you guys are describing this is, you know, I don't know if you're Star Trek fans, and especially with the Next Generation, they had what was called a holodeck, which was an area where they could go in and basically make any type of environment that they wanted.
Oh, yeah.
Mountain climbing, all that stuff. It almost sounds to me like you were in an institutional environment being investigated, being checked out and probed and whatever else is going on. But to you, your vision was that you were still at the...
And that's a distinct possibility, because when Laura actually did her hypnosis, it came out as if she was describing a dream where her conscious mind would not look at it as an event that actually happened. And in her dream, she actually saw the tables and kind of a clinical setting.
So it very well could be that you were just, they were making it so that you still felt like you were where you were supposed to be.
That's a very distinct possibility. Sure.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Now, I mean, was there violence involved in this, the continuing
probing?
I feel
like there was. I had, my jaw was extremely sore the next day. My neck was very sore. My throat was extremely raw.
Yeah, when I went under it, I talked a lot about this blue light being used to put us in kind of a terror state, almost to the point where we would dissociate. And once we dissociated, it was a lot easier to work with us.
Okay.
And so whatever the critters were, that was their technique. It wasn't anesthesia. It wasn't, you know, it was just basically overwhelm the emotional state.
So now you've had a chance to kind of review what you've gone through in hypnotherapy. Do you believe this to be aliens? Do you believe it to be... I know when you read the book, it almost feels like it's more not so much aliens, but maybe dimensional portals.
That's what we were actually thinking. And we've had some subsequent sessions to kind of unravel that, and that's something for probably another time. But we do feel like it was dimensional.
Yeah, that was... Since then, we've talked to some people who are from that area, and they've said that the portal activity in that area is most profound during a new moon, and that's when we'd actually gone up there. It was a new moon that we'd gone up on, and so.
And we were interested to read that the orange glow that they talked about in the book, actually, apparently from the ranch, when you look at it, you can see it as a portal. We were camped right under that. We had no idea that that's where it was.
Sure, so okay.
And probably, we may be running out of time here, but something that we did come up with in the hypnosis that at least Matt and I concur with, Laura's still very reticent to bring these things out, is that there is something that was left inside of us that is somewhat symbiotic. And in subsequent sessions, we were told to a certain degree why it was there and what it was there to do.
Well, why haven't you checked that out yet? I would think, you know, having a scan or a full-body MRI
We would absolutely love that. I mean, if somebody were to offer to put that bill, we'd take it right now.
Okay, so if we could find somebody that's willing to do an MRI full-body scan for you guys.
I would absolutely love that.
All right.
Because I'm still very skeptical. Part of me thinks, you know what, I must be nuts. You know, when I feel the movement, when I get the pain, when there's that kind of an interaction, I want to see if it's there.
Where do you think that this symbiote being is?
Well, I feel like it's somewhere near the prefrontal cortex. I know that sounds really odd, but right between my eyes, just to the left.
Right where the third eye would be, right? Okay.
Or just to the left, and it kind of moves around. I know it's different with different people.
All right.
But I would love to see what it is.
Well,
and
sure.
I'm not nuts.
Yeah, after I went in under hypnosis the first time, I got up and I said, wow, I have got one hell of an imagination.
Right.
And then we sat down and kind of compared notes and drawings and stuff, and there was just way too many similarities, that it kind of a sense of unease, like, oh my goodness.
But now when you listen to these tapes...
The most stark similarity was the presence of a human man, an older man with gray hair, unshaven, that was wearing a flannel shirt. And that's something we had never discussed.
But listening to the tapes and being objective, I mean, I'd love to hear the tapes sometime and hear the comparison.
Yeah.
Do you feel that at any time the hypnotherapists, and I know the skeptics are going to be asking this, the hypnotherapists lead you? Like, okay, Matt, they talked to you first, and you saw the man with the flannel shirt. Did then Rich, when they spoke to you, did they said, do you see a disheveled man with a flannel shirt? I mean, were they leading you down those paths?
Actually, the flannel shirt was brought up by, you know, two different therapists at who had never worked with each other before. So it was something that was brought up by the actual person.
What do these outsiders think? The people that are, do they think you're nuts listening to you? I mean, these hypnotherapists? And please understand, I'm not saying that with any disrespect, but I would think...
No, I'm right there with you, Dave.
You know, especially you do investigation, not investigation.
I'm pretty good friends with both of the hypnotherapists, and one of them for the first couple of months would call me about once a week and ask me if I'd had an exorcism yet. So she said she had never had anything that weird and just kind of dark and scary before.
Now, let me get this straight, though. You guys are going back there.
Yeah, we actually felt a drawing towards it, and when in a subsequent hypnotherapy, we were asked what we had to do, and we said, well, we're supposed to bring more people there. So
for more probing and checking. I mean, do you feel good about that?
Well, and part of me is very skeptical. I want to go there again. You know, I'm going to set up and I'm going to watch this. I'm not going to go in with the same mindset. You know, I am hoping I go up there and absolutely nothing happens.
Are you going to bring a thermal cam?
We're going to take a lot of different things with us this time. We're going to take digital recordings, sound recordings. We're going to try to do some digital and flash photography because we've actually seen from this area some.
But now, if you were this dumbed down, you know, if you were that high, I mean, and I'm not going to make any bones about it. When I was a teenager, I got high and I got stoned.
Sure.
So I know, you know, that kind of just not wanting to do anything, you know, or not being able to cognizantly do it, you know, it might be like, yeah, man, we should record this.
It might.
Know what I mean? Absolutely. Do you have are you going to preset this stuff up as soon as you get there so that you don't have to worry about, you know, being struck dumb during this?
That's the hope.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're going to try to hit two or three of the sites. Like I said, there's a reservoir nearby that's also, there's going to be a lot of portal activity. So we hope to...
Now, is this just for your group you're going to be doing this with, or...?
For this initial group, if other groups wanted to go into the area, if they wanted to contact us, I'm sure we could probably arrange something.
Well, what if you've got people out there that are listening right now or listening when they download it this week? I know we get a lot of people during the week that'll check out the show. If they're interested and they have equipment and good equipment, would you be interested in having them join you so that you guys can try to maybe set up stuff so that you can film it from just about every angle?
Absolutely.
I would think setting up a perimeter.
That'd be especially cool. Just if they come along, just know that, you know, we're not going to take any responsibility if something does happen.
Right. And we would say we want to make sure there's no pets and that we don't take firearms.
Okay.
And we would also say that we don't want any alcohol or illegal drugs up there.
Sure. That's fair enough. But, you know.
But other than that, we welcome anybody with the kind of equipment that can record and those types of things. We really welcome that.
How can people contact you if they want to join in and they've got the equipment? Or more importantly, if people are listening and you have contacts in Utah with medical people that are willing to do an MRI for these guys to check them out and see if they've, you know, got some kind of creature living in their heads or are they just nuts? You know, if there's somebody out there that wants to help you out with this, how can they get in touch with you?
Probably the easiest way would be to go to aliendave.com. That's the website of the Utah UFO Hunters. And then just go to the forum. We're both pretty active on the forum there.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can be reached there at aliendave.com?
Yeah, through the forum.
Okay. Now, you guys are also going to be at this conference coming up here in a couple of weeks, correct?
We are. The conference is on May 12th and 13th in Salt Lake City. It's at the old Peary Hotel. There's a $50 charge to get in. It's the night before, they're actually going to do a ghost hunt. The Peary's supposed to be haunted.
Great.
And they're going to have several presenters there. Can I give you the website for that?
That'd be great. Yeah, please.
It's ghostwave.com.
Okay.
And just look for the conference link.
All right, so it's ghostwave, WAVE.com.
Correct.
And you can check out information. There's all kinds of speakers that'll be there talking about all different forms of the paranormal, and you two are going to be doing a presentation.
We will. We're going to do a multimedia presentation on this.
Are you bringing parts of your hypnotherapy tapes so that people can actually hear the hypnotherapy for themselves?
Yeah,
okay.
We are.
And how about, like, the photographs of the video you said you saw of the Earth lights?
Yeah, we have that too.
That will be there as well, yeah.
All right. Well, you know, and if anybody attends this program, I'd love to hear back on what your take is on this event and what their thoughts are once they've had a chance to see you guys. And I'd love to have you both back on the show, maybe to talk a little bit more as you guys keep investigating. When is the next time you're going to go out and check out the Skinwalker Ranch?
We're hoping the first couple weeks of May.
Oh, okay. So it's coming up relatively quickly.
It is.
Okay. Well, yeah, please, certainly, if you have any more crazy events happen, you know, we definitely want you to keep in touch with the show here. Let us know. Now, what can you tell us? I mean, we've got about 3 minutes left in the show. I don't want to rush you, but what can you tell us you've taken away from this? I mean, are you afraid? Are you more open than you were before? Are you angry? Do you feel, I don't know, what are you guys feeling about all this that went on?
Kind of curious and perplexed, probably.
Well, initially, Dave, I was very angry.
Okay.
But I've come to peace with it. I really am. What I've kind of realized is that we may not be, as human beings, the entire focus of the universe. We may be fairly incidental. And at first it made me angry, and now I'm at peace with it.
Okay. Well, that's, yeah, I mean, it sounds amazing to me. I got to tell you, you know, like, we've got this opportunity to go out with the guy from Yosetti and go to his place in Washington. That sounds interesting to me, and I'd like to go do that. I have no interest in going to the Skinwalker Ranch area. That sounds nuts.
It is. It is.
I mean, that's, you know, and I don't mean that again.
If you're doing a car trip, though.
Pardon me?
If you're going to do a road trip to Washington, we're on the way.
Okay, well, yeah. Tim and I will wave at you guys on the, we'll hit you with our spotlight as we drive by, because I don't know that we're hanging out at the Skinwalker Ranch, you know? That sounds terrifying.
Fun spots if you want to plan a UFO road trip.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I would love to swing out and check out some different sites. But yeah, I mean, it just sounds terrifying what you do. You know, I mean, Tim's over here kind of smirking through it because he's more the skeptic of the two of us.
Well, but, and that's what we really want as far as people when they come out. We want the skeptics.
Okay.
Because that would really help.
You're not getting me without a firearm. I know that much.
Exactly.
Because I'll tell you what, if you wake up and Matt looks at Tim and says, I'm sorry, I couldn't stop him, Tim's going to choke Matt to death. What do you mean you couldn't stop him?
I could not stop him.
I'm opening up with both barrels on anything that moves.
That's right. Well, yeah, please. And, you know, and people, if you have trouble getting in touch with Matt or Rich and you have an interest in going with them, email me, dave@darknessradio.com. I'll make sure that we pass the information on to these guys and let them know about it. Rich, Matt, I can't thank you guys enough for coming on this evening, kind of whetting our appetite about the events at the Skinwalker Ranch. We've got Colm Kelleher is going to be on the show with us here the last Sunday of this month, and he'll talk about the book that he wrote, Hunt for Skinwalker, and we'll talk about that and then maybe follow up with you guys sometime in May here to find out more about what you guys have experienced. Because I know we're, you know, I'm interested. I'm sure the listeners are interested. If you'd like to hear more from these guys, let us know, and we'll definitely have them back as often as they'd like to come back with us as well. Is there anything else you guys would like to talk about? Any books, anything else coming out that we need to let people know about?
I've got one out right now that's it's called The Saul Narratives. It's at Amazon. You can get it at Borders, Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
Rich Oliver, and I've got one coming out here in about 2 months. So.
And I'd invite everybody to go to aliendave.com, and that's where kind of the hub of all the, you know, for the Western states at least, kind of weird UFO stuff.
Great. Right. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us on The Darkness on the Edge of Town. We appreciate the stories you shared with us. We look forward to hearing more from you here in the future. Make sure that you tune in with us next week. We've got Sharon Gammel, who owns and operates Thayer's Historic Bed and Breakfast in Annandale, Minnesota. Thayer's is the only award-winning Minnesota bed and breakfast that specializes in ghost hunting. Sharon is also a psychic medium intuitive herself. She'll be here to talk to us about her haunted home, her abilities, and the things that go on. Todd Bates and Dwayne Cloud will also be joining us. They're going to be with the Supernatural Summit that's coming up here at the end of the month. Please check that out at supernaturalsummit.com. Todd Bates will be covering things like electronic voice phenomena. Dwayne Cloud will be talking to us about ghost investigations. It's a fantastic show. Make sure you tune in with us next week. Same time, same channel. Thank you very much for listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town. This is AM 1470 KLBB, Brooklyn Park.